Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And if I recall, I'm Ken Reardon. Oh, very nice.
I was wondering how we would get that in there. I think we should talk about Wisconsin, Ken, because everyone is talking about Wisconsin. Everyone is trying to extrapolate and extricate lessons from Wisconsin. What do you take away from Wisconsin, Ken?
Well, I take away we, the people of Wisconsin and people beyond the borders of Wisconsin, spent $66 million, and we wound up in something that looks like exactly like the 2010 elections.
It was about a percentage point different. An interesting fact about the numbers in this election is you would think if you were Tom Barrett and somebody were to come along and say, hey, Tom, you're going to get more votes in this recall election than Scott Walker got in being elected in 2010 in a regular gubernatorial election, you'd have thought, wow, that's pretty great. I'm going to get more votes. I must be the winner. But in fact, he did get more votes than Walker got in 2010. And Walker got still more votes and went over the top. 2.5 million people voted in this election. And the incredible thing is they came out just about exactly where the polls were. And they came out just about exactly where a slightly smaller but still quite large turnout came out in 2010.
The question is, after all that money, after all that effort, after all that excitement that Democrats and labor unions and the left got those million signatures to get the recall.
An extraordinary number of signatures.
Absolutely, far more than they needed.
More people signed that than what? Live in Alaska.
Well, yeah. Or listen to this podcast.
Almost.
Yeah. But I mean, all that buildup, and then ultimately, they had to know that tons and tons of money would come into the state.
I don't think they really anticipated that very well. I don't think they anticipated the degree to which there would be an absolute flood of money from outside the state that was not theirs. In other words, that three-fourths, for example, of Scott Walker's contributions over $10,000 would come from out of state, from conservative groups, from conservative individuals, from people giving $1 million, you know, to essentially keep Scott Walker in place as a symbol of the conservative movement in America.
But I'm not convinced that's what won it for him. Here's what labor did in 2011. They went after John Kasich, the Ohio governor, his plan about teachers and unions and things like that. There was an initiative on the ballot, question number two, or issue number five, whatever it was. It was question number two and issue number five. And they defeated it overwhelmingly. And a lot of people said, well, this is proof that the potency of organized labor is real. And look out, 2012.
That's right. And I think also, look out, Scott Walker. Back in 2011, a lot of people thought that because of that vote in Ohio, the handwriting was on the wall for Scott Walker. Then you got this huge petition success where they gathered this enormous number of signatures. So the impression that was creating was that this recall could actually work against Scott Walker. But the fact of the matter is, in the end, you need more than 900,000 or a million people to sign a petition. You also need more votes than the other guys. And as I said a moment ago, Barrett did greatly increase his vote from 2010, but it wasn't enough because Walker increased his vote proportionally.
Right.
So in the end,
as much as the turnout, the anti-Walker turnout was so impressive, so was the pro-Walker turnout.
Yes. Now, a couple of other things that are rather interesting about this vote. Labor is going to have to step back and take a look at its own house. Not for the reasons that a lot of people are putting forward, saying the labor movement is over, America doesn't need unions anymore, we finally slain the dragon back to 1935 and the Wagner Act, or go all the way back to the 19th century. That's not what labor needs to ask itself. It needs to ask itself, why did so many of our people, union household voters, vote for Scott Walker? Now, some two-thirds of the people who were in public employee unions were more than glad to vote against Scott Walker. But when you turn to the people whose union is in a private industry, say organized by the United Auto Workers, for example, or electrical workers, those people split almost even, almost even. So they didn't really contribute anything to the recall, that is, as a group of voters.
Well, there are also people who realize that when Scott Walker came into office in 2011, it was a $3.6 billion budget deficit that he vowed to eliminate. And, of course, he may be more extreme than some people would have liked.
And without raising any kind of taxes.
Without raising taxes. Revenue. But, I mean, there are a lot of people. You see this in New Jersey. We see this in Ohio. We see this in Michigan. We've seen it in Florida. That people say, well, maybe the unions are asking for too much. Maybe the unions are getting too much in retirement benefits and future benefits that the states can't afford.
And that means, if you follow that reasoning, and if you follow Scott Walker's reasoning, that they should not have collective bargaining rights as they have had in Wisconsin or in Ohio and some of these other states. That's yet another step.
It is a step beyond, absolutely.
But I believe the question here for labor is, if you cannot get the people who work for private companies in a union to vote for this issue, to vote against Scott Walker, how can you then plunge a state like Wisconsin or another state that they might go after into this kind of political maelstrom for this length of time when you can't even get the people who are members of an AFL-CIO union to vote majority or more than a slight majority in favor of your position? They've got to look to their own house.
I think of the tactics they used as well. They first of all, they backed a candidate other than Tom Barrett in the Democratic primary, somebody who all polls showed had no chance of beating Walker in the recall.
Who has run statewide a number of times in primaries and has not shown the ability to win.
But look, ultimately, I don't think it was who the Democrats were going to put up. I think
That's
ultimately
right.
It was about you're for Walker and what he did or against what he did.
That's right.
But again, having that distraction of a primary a month before the general recall election couldn't have helped.
So the question in Wisconsin now is, where does the state go from here? First off, how do they make peace between all of these rival factions that's riven the families, it's riven the friendships, it's really caused an enormous amount of turmoil in the state emotionally. Here's what Scott Walker, newly re-embraced, if you will, by the voters, had to say on that subject on Tuesday night.
Tonight we tell Wisconsin, we tell our country, and we tell people all across the globe that voters really do want leaders who stand up and make the tough decisions. But now it is time to move on and move forward in Wisconsin.
Now, you understand forward is the state motto of Wisconsin, so that's an important word for him.
On Wisconsin, but I think we have to move forward to November and try to see if any of this matters in Romney v. Obama.
It can matter because obviously there's an energizing effect here for Republicans and for conservatives, and there is a heightening of interest in Wisconsin for national conservatives and for the Republican Party. I think after what happened this week, it would be very difficult for Romney not to put Wisconsin on his list of states he was going to seriously
contest. It's already done for him because a lot of these offices that were set up for Walker are now being transferred as we speak, or as I speak, because you're not really speaking right now. They will become Romney campaign office in Wisconsin. He hasn't been in the state since the April primary. He hasn't run a single ad. He hasn't put staff in there. But now it's possible this gives the Romney campaign the entree into the state that they may not have had otherwise.
The infrastructure, if you will.
Yeah.
And I also like the thought that Wisconsin is going to become a high priority for a lot of conservatives who previously really didn't think about it that much. They would have rather looked at Michigan, maybe even Minnesota because of its symbolic value. It really had not been a big focus for the national conservative movement before now, and now it is.
One lingering question about Wisconsin and the recall, should President Obama have done more than tweet his support of Tom Barrett?
If you believe that Barack Obama won Wisconsin in 2008 by 14 points because he was beloved by Wisconsinites, because he had absolutely captured the hearts and minds of that state, then surely he should have gone back in and helped Tom Barrett in 2010, much more than he did. And certainly this month, he should have been back in there rallying the troops in the city of Milwaukee and so on. The problem with that is the troops in the city of Milwaukee were turning out for Tom Barrett, by and large. And the Democrats who would be energized by having Barack Obama come back into the state were probably pretty much energized. You look at these turnout figures, something in the neighborhood of more than 70%. That didn't really seem to be the problem. The problem was that there were so many more Republicans turning out than Democrats. And if Barack Obama had come in to campaign for Barrett, it's hard to believe that would not have been all the more of a goad to those Republicans.
And we did see the president trying to expend some political capital in New Jersey in 2009 with Governor John Corzine campaigning for him, with Craig Deeds in Virginia. Both candidates lost, and a lot of people blamed Obama. Of course, not that, you know, that's kind of oversimplification, but I don't think the president needed to get involved. And in fairness, Mitt Romney didn't really campaign in Wisconsin either. I think both Romney and Obama were fascinated by what was going on, but at arm's length.
You mentioned New Jersey. The Obama White House did not officially embrace either candidate in that member-on-member race.
Kind of did.
But David Axelrod, the president's more or less lead campaign advisor, did go in for Steve Rothman.
Right. This is the 9th Congressional District. This is a combination of Bergen County, Passaic County, and Hudson County. And Steve Rothman did get a little walkthrough at the White House with President Obama a few weeks ago, and everybody was saying this show.
Is that an endorsement?
Endorsement. And it's interesting because the other Democratic incumbent that Steve Rothman was thrown in against, Bill Pascrell, Bill Clinton clearly endorsed Pascrell because, of course, Bill Pascrell endorsed Hillary Clinton.
That's
early.
Where really this all comes
exactly.
from. It's from the 2008 Democratic primary.
So, of course, this suddenly became a proxy war between Obama and Clinton, and, of course, it wasn't. But
if Obama-Clinton had been a factor, how much difference could that have made in a race that turned out to be a total landslide?
It was amazing. First of all, I mean, the backstory of this is that when Rothman's district was thrown in with Pascrell, a lot of Democrats wanted him to run against Scott Garrett, also in Bergen County, a conservative Republican. Even if Rothman was going to lose, he would have put up the good fight and would have had the gratitude of many Democrats.
And it looks now as though he should have done that.
Well, he wouldn't have beaten him anyway. But
he would have had the gratitude.
Right. By challenging a fellow Democratic incumbent, they used to be close friends.
They have been for years.
Bitter enemies. And Pascrell is 75 years old.
Just wait.
But we know what he did also. But Pascrell also was a much better campaigner. He had better troops on the ground. And the sadness for Rothman is that from day one, he was planning to run for the Senate. He was waiting for Frank Lautenberg to retire, which was going to happen soon. But he couldn't run, obviously, if he's going to get defeated for renomination. One more thing about New Jersey. In the 10th District in Newark, Donald Payne Jr., the son of the late congressman, won a special primary and the regular primary. Donald Payne Jr. will follow his late father.
You like his chances in November there in that district?
There are 9 Republicans in the 10th Congressional
District. Have they found one of the 9 who is willing to actually be the candidate?
There is a Republican candidate, but a Republican has not held that seat since 1946. And the guy who beat him was Peter Rodino.
Peter Rodino, who served with some distinction in the United States House for something like 40 years.
He was involved in that Nixon recall election.
As I recall. Okay, we've spent a lot of time in Wisconsin and New Jersey, 2 states we don't usually talk about too terribly much. And now we're going to go to California, which often gets a fair share of attention. But there's really not that much to be said about what happened in California this week. It was a preliminary round.
Well, that's exactly right. Yes, there were 2 instances of Democratic incumbents running against each other in 2 separate districts. But under California's new election law, all the candidates, regardless of party, run on the same ballot. And the top 2 finishers advanced to November, no matter what happened in Tuesday's primary.
So the big Berman-Sherman Armageddon, we just do it again in November.
Yes, but it was interesting to see that Brad Sherman led Howard Berman 42% to 32%. That was pretty much...
That's surprising.
Yeah, especially because since almost all the endorsements went to Howard Berman.
That's right. Well, and Janice Hahn came out ahead of Laura Richardson in pretty commanding fashion and would look like she was in pretty good shape for November.
Absolutely. And Laura Richardson, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, who basically this was her geographical base. There were some questions about her finances that basically dogged the whole campaign.
And another member from the Los Angeles area, Maxine Waters, who's been representing an inner city district there since the 1980s, since Gus Hawkins was the representative from Watts, and that goes back a long time. She was not in any kind of electoral trouble in this primary, but just this week, the House Ethics Committee has decided to go forward with an investigation of her involvement with a bank that got some special treatment back in 2008 during the financial meltdown, and which it turns out her husband had some financial interest in. That's been under investigation now since 2008. It seems it's been several years, and that will go forward by the formal decision of the House Ethics Committee.
Right. House Ethics Committee announced this week that they unanimously decided that it will go forward. There were 4 other states that had primaries on Tuesday. One worth mentioning in New Mexico, Martin Heinrich, the congressman, and former Congresswoman Heather Wilson will be the respective Democratic and Republican nominees for the Senate seat being given up by Democrat Jeff Bingaman.
Okay, that's New Mexico. And speaking of new things, here's a new thought, one we've never considered before. Bill and Hillary Clinton.
How so?
It seems that Hillary Clinton might be interested. She's now the Secretary of State, as you know. She might be interested in running for president in 2016. And her husband seems to be interested in running for president in 2012.
Well, let's do Hillary Clinton first. I don't think for a second that Hillary Clinton is thinking or preparing to run for president in 2016, but Nancy Pelosi, the former House Speaker, said it would be wonderful if Hillary Clinton got in the race in 2016. Ed Rendell, the former governor of Pennsylvania, former DNC chair, is also talking about Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Gee, that's funny. Wasn't Ed with her in 2008?
He was. And I think everybody wants Hillary Clinton to run except, one, Hillary Clinton, and two, Jill Biden, because Jill Biden said the other day that Joe Biden would be a great... And this is great because what the Democratic Party needs in 2016 is new blood.
Here's the question. I would like to go back to the former president of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, who has been all over the television in the past several days, weighing in on Wisconsin, weighing in on the weak jobs report that we got just a few days ago, which was so far below expectations and which has been seen as another big bruise, another flat tire, if you will, in the Obama reelection machine.
He's been helping the Romney campaign every way he can.
Bill Clinton or Barack Obama? Yeah. This is Bill Clinton talking about, for example, what we should do with the Bush tax cuts that are expiring later this year.
They will probably have to put everything off until early next year. That's probably the best thing to do right now. But the Republicans don't want to do that unless he agrees to extend the tax cuts permanently, including for upper-income people. And I don't think the president should do that. I don't have any problem with extending all of it now, including the current spending levels. They look high because there's a recession, so the taxes look lower than they really would be if we had 2.5-3% growth. And the spending is higher than it would be if we had 2.5-3% growth because there are so many people getting food stamps, so many people getting unemployment, so many people on Medicaid.
This man sounds very expert about government.
It was my understanding there would be no math, but at the same time, yes, he's against the Bush tax cuts being permanent, but we should
He wants them extended.
Yeah, but he still wants them extended. I think that steps on the Obama message a little bit.
Go with me here just for a moment into cold, hard calculation of the type that we used to call Clintonian. Is it better for Hillary Clinton to run for president in 2016 with Barack Obama in the White House or with Mitt Romney in the White House?
Well, see, that's a very, very important question. It reminds me of what happened to the Tea Party in 2010. The Tea Party would not have existed if John McCain were elected president in 2008.
Probably.
The best thing that happened to the Tea Party was Barack Obama winning the presidency.
And the worst thing, in a sense, was the successful Republican election of 2010, which took a lot of the, if you will, wind out of their sails.
So I kind of think that the thought of a Democrat succeeding President Obama after two terms in 2016 is quite unlikely, and the best scenario may not be the best thing for the Democratic Party.
We're talking about the Clintons now.
Right. Others can't debate this, but for Hillary Clinton to even dream about 2016, she may not be dreaming about it, although everybody else may be dreaming about
Bill is dreaming about it.
You need Mitt Romney to win the 2012 election.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. Don't mess with Bill. No. Don't mess with Bill. Don't mess with Bill. Say it one more time. Don't mess with Bill. Well, I know he's the guy who put tears